Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. Monday, July 6, 2015. Episode 53 of the Hockey Guys Podcast. Here's truly Hunter Crowther and my co-host Chris Shannon. Got a very exciting show today. Joining us as our guest today is David Singer, founder of HockeyFights.com. He's going to come on and talk about the launch of the website, his views on fighting in the game, and an upcoming project he's working on called Ice Guardians, a documentary on the evolution of the role of the enforcer. Chris, Monday. That sucks, but it's the summer, so it sucks less. What are you up to, man?
Not much. Woke up early, like, really. Taking in the summer, you know. I mean, it's going by pretty fast already, but July 4th over here in the U.S., and it's a fun time. I'm excited to get the show going and talk to our next guest, David Singer.
Yeah, he's a pretty interesting guy. I really am excited to ask him about how he came up with the concept of HockeyFights.com, because it's probably the number one website-related thing in hockey. I mean, I can tell you anyone goes on HockeyFights every single day to look. It's pretty easy to get lost in a three-hour loop of 80s hockey fights. And trust me, we'll be talking about our favorite scraps when David comes on, and I'm expecting he'll be on in the next 10 or so minutes. But before that, it is the NHL summer, the dog days, where in between Blue Jay games, you're looking up what's going on in the hockey world. And let's talk a little bit about it. Where I want to start off is the Buffalo Sabres signed Ryan O'Reilly to a 7-year, $52.5 million contract. A lot of people have been wondering, it's a lot of term, that's a lot of money. But I think for a 24-year-old forward, I'd rather sign him at 7 years then, as opposed to 7 years when he would usually reach free agency in his late 20s. Chris, what are your thoughts on Ryan O'Reilly signing long-term with the Buffalo Sabres?
I agree with you as well. I mean, he's a number one center. I wrote that on Twitter. I was like, I'm happy with that deal for Buffalo. I mean, everyone wants a number one center. This is your opportunity. You know, Mark Bergeron said at the end of the year, you're never going to get a number one center. I mean, it's so hard to trade for a number one center, which I don't believe, because, I mean, you've seen that. But I really do think Ryan O'Reilly will turn into that number one center. That contract's really fair for a number one center. I mean, everyone looks for that guy. He's going to be a beast. We know that. We've seen it. If you watch Colorado, he's been just one guy with three other stars. That's the problem. He hasn't had the chance to shine, and people haven't noticed him because they've had the McKinnons, the Landeskogs, the Stastnys, you know, like, now they're finally going to get his push to become that number one center. He's going to have great wingers. He's going to have Kane probably on his wing. And who knows? I mean, if he really does have to be a number two center, you've got a nice guy in Jack Eichel to take that number one position.
Yeah, I think the Buffalo Sabres have done a good job of compiling talent within the last calendar year, or within the last 6 months. I mean, when you think back to, remember the first show that you and I did together was the same day that Evander Kane got traded to the Buffalo Sabres. And yep. I remember that day thinking, wow, what a deal on the Sabres' behalf, because they've acquired a player that has taken so much heat and so much negativity from the media, and now he's just going to be injured the rest of the year, so no one's going to bring him up again, and you're going to have him fresh for the beginning of the next season. You also got Zach Bogosian in that deal, who I still think is a very underrated defenseman, and people don't give enough credit. You've also added Jack Eichel, who, you know, we've talked about him a lot on this show. Any other year, he'd be the first overall pick. And I think he's going to come in hot to Buffalo. I think that this is a kid who's very highly motivated. And now you've added Ryan O'Reilly, who's one of the best two-way centers in the game. I mean, he's such a fascinating player. He doesn't wear the visor. He looks scruffy as hell. Never takes penalties, though. I mean, the definition of body checking is separating the man from the puck, and he doesn't even have to lay you out. He just takes the puck from you. And I think that how they acquired him and the deal that they were able to get done with him. It's 7 years, and like I said, a lot of people complain about the term and the money, but, you know, overall, I think that's good value for a guy who offensively is well-structured. He's a very good analytical player, but defensively, he's already a future Selke Trophy winner. Like, he's incredible. So I think that the Buffalo Sabres have done a very good job on that. Another move that happened recently was the San Jose Sharks signing Joel Ward to a 3-year, a little under $10 million. Joel Ward's 34, and while he's getting up there in age, he just came off a very productive playoff season with the Washington Capitals. He scored some clutch goals. He proved that he really is one of those stable veterans. What are your thoughts on Joel Ward going into a San Jose team now that's added Pete DeBoer and Paul Martin?
Yeah, I mean, we all thought they were going to be this rebuilding team, and they've totally not done that. I mean, they've really kind of targeted saying, this is our chance, you know, this year and the next year, we want to win the Cup, and they're still going with that dream that they've had for the last 7 years with Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau. I mean, there's still some good players on that team. Like I said, Marleau, Thornton, Couture, Pavelski, Burns. So you're adding a guy like Paul Martin, great guy on the back line. You know, he doesn't get enough credit. When he was with Pittsburgh, he was great, and we saw last year with him injured how bad Pittsburgh was and how his role was so big with that team. Joel Ward, just great addition to that team. I mean, any team wants a guy like that. I was really pushing for Montreal to get him because he's just such a guy that can build up your lineup anywhere you want to put him. He played with Ovechkin and Backstrom in the playoffs, and he did well with them. He can play a third-line role. I like that move a lot. He's getting old. I mean, he's 34, and it's surprising hearing that he's actually 34 because he plays like he's much younger. He still has a fight to his game. I still think he's got a couple good years in for him. Santa was it. You know, they've totally changed what my perspective was with them. I thought they were really going to be that rebuilding team. They're finally going to do this rebuild, and they have totally pushed that away, and it's going to be really interesting to see if they can be a playoff team this year.
Absolutely. And I liked how you mentioned how he does have an ability to move up and down the line. If you can put him in a third-line role, ask him to be a little more of a forechecking defensive presence with a little bit of offensive flair. But if you put him with good players, and San Jose's known for that, I mean, Joe Thornton is, like, he might be the best setup man of the 2000s. He might be the best passer. Like, he's one of the most... He's still underrated. People rip on Joe Thornton's playoff record, but he's one of the greatest offensive setups in the history of hockey. And Patrick Marleau, who, it's no accident, he's played on two Olympic teams. I mean, he's incredible. And I think that this was a very savvy move by San Jose. I don't know exactly what they're doing. I thought they were going to unload on some of their younger guys. I thought they were going to try and go maybe a little younger. But it seems like they're a team that really believes that, you know, we missed the playoffs last year, but we're just as good as anybody in the Western Conference. And I still think they have to add to their blue line. I still think that, you know, their goaltending situation is a little murky. But, you know, with the additions of DeBoer, Paul Martin, that was out of nowhere. I didn't expect them to sign the veteran blue liner. And now you've got Joel Ward, who's a very productive signing. I think they've made some good moves. And I don't know. We'll see how it goes, but you know, good move on the Sharks. I think that's a player that's going to get a lot of production out of. We're going to hit on two quick signs before we're joined by David Singer of Hockey Fights. The Toronto Maple Leafs signed Nazem Kadri to a 1-year contract extension. They were in the middle of an RFA situation, and they decided to sign him. 1 year on Naz. What do you think about that?
I thought it was a good contract. I mean, you know, the Leafs brass is trying to see what they have, and they're trying to see if who's going to be part of their long-term plans. You know, Kadri, I think, is supposed to be part of that long-term plan. I mean, he's a young guy. He played with London, so Hunter knows him well. I think he should work well with that team. I mean, he can be that center that everyone wants. You know, you've got Riley, who's another guy that they're going to have. Those are two key pieces to this team. I mean, I really think it's those two. And Marner, who you're going to have to sign here. And it's interesting what they did with that contract. So everyone saw it, and they're like, why would they do that? And then everyone thought about it, like, well, you know, they're going to evaluate him and see if he's part of this core. I like Nazem Kadri, you know. He was a Habs fan growing up. He loves the Habs. Now he doesn't. But, I mean, I love the rivalry between him and Gallagher. You know, I like Nazem Kadri as a player, and he might be one of the Leaf players that I actually respect, and I think that he's great. I think that's a good – the Leafs are doing it right, Hunter, and I know you know that, but, like, they really are doing this whole thing right. You know, they're not just a team that's going to go put all these rookies out there and say, good luck, and, like, put all these AHL players this year. They're getting players. They're getting good players. They're signing the free agents that they want to. They're not shying away because, oh, we're supposed to be a rebuilding team. Babcock wants to be a contender, and he's not going to ruin the rebuilding. Like, he's not going to ruin this whole rebuild that everyone's doing. He just wants to try his best to be a contender, and I think we see that with the free agents they've signed.
Yeah, they've made a lot of small moves that, you know, aren't really huge moves in a sense, but at the same time, they'll be able to help their team. We just got news right before we came on air that Shawn Mathias signed with the Leafs for a one-year deal, a little over $2 million. That's another guy who scored 18 goals last year. I believe 17 of them were on even strength, so you know that he has the ability to generate offense. That's a guy who, you know, similar to Joel Ward, you can move between the second and third line. He's a cheap signing. It's a one-year deal. I see the running joke on Twitter that they're gonna just trade him for a second-round pick at the deadline next year, which there's nothing wrong with that. Get assets out of that. Be the next Daniel Winnick or Mike Santarelli. There's no problems with that on my end. And when it comes to Kadri, he's a very skilled player. We've seen he has an incredible ability to generate offense. I think he's really evolved over the last few years, and some people can say whatever about his issues off the ice, but he's a young kid, which, you know, I think any young guy in the NHL likes to have fun. So if Nazem Kadri likes to have fun, but all of a sudden he's in the media, he's in the middle of the hockey mecca where there's 50 reporters everywhere, then I can't hold that against him. But I think that on a one-year deal, this is Naz's ability to prove, you know what, I'm going to get a lot more opportunity. I'm probably going to play way more than Tyler Bozak. This is my chance to show that I am a top NHL center. And if I do that, then the Leafs are going to have no choice but to pay him. Or maybe they'll trade him. But I guess we'll find out. Joining us on the line right now is a man who created the well-known website Hockey Fights and is currently working on an upcoming documentary called Ice Guardians, which takes an in-depth look at the history and role of an enforcer in the game of hockey. David Singer. David, I'm so glad we can have you on the show. How are you doing this Monday?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, my first question that I'm going to ask you, and I'm sure you've gotten asked this all the time, but just a little softball to throw it out there. How and why did you create the site? And when I say that, I mean, how were you able to just compile all these fights on the internet and then be able to put them in a single place for hockey fans to go to?
Well, you know, it really snowballed from something that I was doing years and years ago. So it was actually back in the late 90s, if we want to go back that far. And I was looking at all the New York players, and I was really tracking them first. It was easy to see penalty minutes. It was easy to see goals and assists, and you knew who was scoring against who. But you didn't really know who was fighting against who. You know, everybody saw highlight packages, and people were making their own VHS tapes back then. But there wasn't a running log of who was fighting who. And in the end, it's, you know, I was probably arguing with friends more than anything else. Think about, like, bar bets, although it was probably before I was able to go into bars. And, you know, we were trying to remember our favorite fights because it was easier to remember our favorite goals. We knew who was doing that and who they were scoring against. And so I created this this log of the New York guys, the Islanders, and then the Rangers and the Sabres. And then it became league-wide, and I sort of just kept adding to it. And by 1999, it was hockeyfights.com. And, you know, just for a few years, it was only a log of the NHL fights and people commenting on it in the forums, because the log was really just stats, and that became the meat of the site. And over time, everything else just sort of evolved. And, you know, eventually there was video. You know, YouTube wasn't even created, I think, for about 7-8 years after after HockeyFights.com launched. So we were posting videos for download, and people were, you know, coming every day just to grab them, and it was a huge pain in the ass for everybody, but they loved it, and I loved it, and eventually everything just got a little easier, but as things get easier, you add more and you make it harder, and, you know, we went on to covering 15 to 20 leagues a year, and just expanding all of the, you know, the broader hockey coverage that we do, because, you know, people ask me all the time, why fights and why not just fights? And I said, well, it's really in the context of the game that I love. And, you know, we just put so much around the game itself that's become a huge part of the site, too. Our news coverage does really well, and I love it. So, you know, all that from your softball question, but it's been a long road, and it's this site has a lot of history. So it's I'm sure I could take this long-winded answer and probably multiply it by 10 if I needed to.
That's my favorite long-winded answer I've ever heard. I'll let Chris ask the next question, but that was awesome. Thank you, David. Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, David, I mean, what you're doing is actually awesome. I love hockey. I love the roots of hockey. You know, we all know fighting is part of hockey. With the people that want fighting out, it's just it's not part of the game. It ruins the game. Fighting is a huge part of this game, but it is dying a little bit. I mean, the role of an enforcer is dying. I mean, fighting, I think, will always be here. But, you know, like now we're seeing, if you want to be a fighter, you have to be able to play. You know, we're seeing guys like Tom Wilson coming up. He's a big body, but he can still fight. Derek Dorsett, I mean, he's a good character guy, and he can be a good penalty killer. Same with Brandon Prescott. Guys like that, they all have to have their own role. They have to be able to, I mean, we saw a fourth line in New York, the New York Islanders with Crombeen and Cutterbuck and Martin. And they were people thought they were enforcers until they saw them on a line, and they were probably one of the best lines in that series against the Washington Capitals. They just punished the OB line. The role of a fighter, I mean, it's much more than just fighting. It's, you know, and the game is changing, and they're still going to be here. And I just want to know what your thoughts are. Like, do you think we'll ever see fighting gone? Like, I know we'll see the role gone of an enforcer, but do you ever think the whole role of a fighter and everything like that is gone?
No, I think it's I don't want to say it's evolving. It's almost like as though it's re-evolving. It's going a bit back to where it used to be, maybe in the 60s and the 70s, where the players who were fighting were more complete players. This really all comes down to coaching. I don't want to put it on the players because some of them who were enforcers over the past 20 or 30 years, some of them were pretty decent hockey players. You know, they racked up goals in juniors. They came up to the AHL or the NHL, and they were given a job to do, and that was it. They were given one job. They had to do it, and they sat back on the bench. I think that style of coaching is almost gone, and that's okay as long as, you know, the game continues to be what it is. Some will argue it's not, that it's lost a bit of soul. Maybe it has, maybe it hasn't. It's still a lot of fun for me to watch. I don't think we'll see the game change too much in terms of fighting, or at least I think the NHL at their level has done almost everything they're going to do to, phase it out a bit, because they certainly have made a bunch of rules that were designed to lower the volume of fighting in the league, and they've succeeded. I don't know if they need to do more, because it'll probably do it itself. You know, it'll phase itself out a little bit more as coaching styles adapt and players adapt. And one thing that's interesting is, you know, we saw a big dip after the lockout of 2004-05, that whole season wiped out. We came back and everyone said fighting was gone. You know, we were at those levels, not last season, but the season before. And now we're a little lower. And but the point is that it went back up again, because players adapted to the new rules, and players will adapt to new rules again. And who knows, maybe we'll see a little bit of a resurgence, maybe we won't. But I think you'll continue to see players who at least take on a piece of that enforcer role, even if they're not enforcers. And, you know, those continue to be the crowd favorites, continue to be the fan favorites. And it would be weird to see them all pushed out of the game when a lot of them have become multidimensional players. You know, some of the players who've been racking up fighting majors now for the past couple of years, these volume guys bring a lot of other things. They're not typical enforcers from 15, 20 years ago. So, you know, when you were asking if I think fighting will be gone, I don't. Will enforcers be gone? For the most part, I think they almost are. Whether or not that's good, I don't know. I've enjoyed the game for a long time. So I can't say that it's necessarily better. But it's not worse either, you know. There are things I'd love to cherry pick from each era of hockey that I've been able to watch. But that's just not possible. So, you know, I'll just continue to see where this road takes us.
It's a fascinating discussion. Like, I wish we almost had the full hour to talk to you about this. I mean, the fact that fighting has evolved to this, and like you said, re-evolved, because what I think happens is maybe there's new parameters and rules put in place, and then, like you said, players have to adapt to it, and then before you know it, I think you're still going to have a road game in Florida on a Wednesday night, and the guys have no gas. Two guys are going to go, and then before you know it, you got a hockey game again. I think that element of the game is always going to be there, but it's when people see that there's less fighting in the Olympics, less fighting in the playoffs, I think they go, oh, well, because it's better hockey. It's not that it's better hockey, it's that desire to fight or that ability for a fight to create momentum, it's either not there or it's not needed, and the guys will just be ready to go. I wish we could talk more about it, but I'm going to ask you now about Ice Guardians, which is a project that you've been working on. Tell us a little bit about what it is and how you got involved with it.
Sure. First, you threw that one out there at me. That wasn't fair. I want to tackle that just a little bit, if you don't mind.
Oh, no. We'll continue on. Don't worry about it, but I'd love to hear about Ice Guardians here.
Sure. So for a long time, yeah. You know, before I was mentioning how old the site was, and it's in its current form, it's over 15 years old already. And it's for all that time where I've learned so much about the game, you know, even before that I was in media a bit, and now I've learned not just about the game, but I guess about the players as well. I've become very friendly with some of them, and it's been a long time. And you want to tell their story. And I've wanted to create a documentary for a long time. And it's been a project that's sort of come and gone. And I've been involved in other people's projects. And most of the time, I backed away from it. They wound up making decisions about telling a narrative that they wanted to tell. And that was never really what I wanted to do. I sort of wanted to let the story tell itself, the good and the bad, from players' perspectives, you know, all different kinds of players. And a couple of years ago, I wound up talking to Adam Scorgi, and he's a documentary filmmaker. And by then, I'd been burned a few times. So we really eased into discussing Ice Guardians, which is a project that he was doing on and off in his own time, because he grew attached to the game because of where he grew up in BC and all the friends that he had who were playing. And eventually I knew that we were aligned in the way that, you know, we really wanted to let the players speak for themselves, and not just the enforcers, but everybody. We wanted to get other viewpoints, and we just wanted to let the story be the story, the history be the history, without, you know, coming in with, oh, that looks like a good human tragedy or a great rebound or whatever it was. We didn't want to, you know, push it. And so eventually, when I realized that we were on the same page there, I joined up with Ice Guardians just as about that he was doing a new kickoff of it. And so it's been a really fun ride over the past 8 months or year that, you know, I've been sort of neck deep in it, and the crew he's got is great. And we've got some great stories to tell. You know, we're still doing interviews now. Hopefully I'll have a lot of fun pictures over the next month or so, and maybe start to have some clips after that. And by the spring, we should have it released in full. and doing a little bit of a circuit. And I can't wait to get it out there and get, you know, just have that story be out there the way it should be.
No, you're doing the Lord's work. I mean, I feel that. No. Oh, my goodness. Like, the way I look at it, I just find it so interesting. That role itself of an enforcer and being the guy who protects your teammates and how hockey was in a time where maybe it isn't in the modern sense, but there was a time where you had to protect your stars and you had to have guys who were you know, insurance policies on these guys who would score a lot of goals. You needed someone to be there. And I think that the idea of that, it really is the epitome of sport, that someone's there to protect their teammate. They're almost the offensive lineman of your quarterback. It really is such a, especially for hockey, it makes it so unique. The last thing we're going to ask you, and then we'll let you go, and trust me, I wish we had more time. Hopefully we'll get you on it again in the near future. Two of my favorite scraps that I can remember were Clark and McSorley in 93, Game 1, Campbell Conference, and then the pair of scraps between Bob Probert and Craig Cox in the 80s. You know, I just see these two come on in the videos you would like to watch on the side, and before you know it, I'm stuck for an afternoon. Are there fights to you that stand out that every so often you'll think about it and you'll have a grin on your face, or maybe when you were watching it, it was such a surreal moment, like something similar to McSorley elbowing Gilmore and then Clark going in and defending his teammate? Is there something like that that really sticks out to you?
Yeah, there are a few moments that stick out. I'd say it was probably because of where I was or maybe just the fight that it was. So I get asked all the time, you know, what my favorite fight is, and that's impossible. But I think an easy one to point to for me would be Probert McSorley in 94 when McSorley was on the Penguins and Probert was still on the Red Wings, and they just had that marathon of a battle. Just two full minutes. It seemed as though they went up and down the ice maybe twice. McSorley's down on a knee and back up again. It's just a great battle. And I also remember it because I was watching it live with a few friends, and the reaction in the room and everybody just being into it and into the game. And another one would probably be Eric Cairns pounding on Shane Corson a bit in the playoffs from, was it about 13 years ago now, 14 years ago. And that was because I was there, and the crowd was the most alive it had been in years. I mean, just, I couldn't remember the Coliseum being that alive since, you know, probably the early 90s. So it was almost like a decade off from having that feeling in that building. And the Islanders gave their all, and it's sort of that moment really racked all of that up in there. And even though they won that moment in that fight, you know, they went on to lose the series, but each team won every home game. It was just a great battle, represented in every which way. And you know, so that stands out too because of, hey, you know, that was. It was a good battle on the ice, but it was a good battle as a game. It was the crowd was intense, and that brought it to a new level that I just hadn't seen in so long. So that really stands out to me.
Yeah, that 0-2 playoff run for the Leafs, especially in Leaf fans' minds, that's probably as close to the Cup final as they've gotten since '93, and that series against the Islanders, it was bloody. It was Tucker kneeing Pekka. It was Curtis Joseph standing on his head. It had all the dramatic effects, and fans will remember it forever. David, we got to go. We got less than a minute left on the show, but we really enjoyed having you. I wish we could have you on longer. Hopefully we can get you on again in the near future. And everybody check him out on Twitter, @Singer. You can go also @HockeyFights. And also check out Ice Guardians, @IceGuardians on Twitter. David, thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
That is David Singer. Chris, what's your favorite fight? Who are your some favorite fights as we got less than 30 seconds left?
I was trying to think about it. I can't really think about it right now. I would say, I mean, the most notable one that I think I'll know, remember, is the Peros versus Orr a couple years ago, but I mean, that was not the best fight. I'm a big fan of Chris Nyland. You know, I wasn't alive for those days, but I'm a big fan of his, and I've seen a lot of his highlights, so I'm a fan of Nyland.
Podcast.